Welcome to the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Norma Walden, chair of the club's International Relations Forum. We also welcome our online and radio listeners. And we invite our audience to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. Our speaker this evening, Joan Gordon, is director of the Pre-College and Adult Extension Divisions at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, which was founded in 1917. For those who don't know, the home of the conservatory is a large, attractive building at 50 Oak Street, just off Van Ness, convenient to the San Francisco Symphony and the San Francisco Opera. Joan Gordon is a Bay Area native. She graduated from San Francisco State University, where she majored in cello performance. In 2011, she returned to the San Francisco Conservatory from a position at the Aspen Music School and Festival, where she was vice president and dean from 2002 to 2011. Previously, she had served as admission officer of the San Francisco Conservatory in the collegiate division from 1994 to 2000. Later in the program, she will be joined by two of her star students. I'll let her tell you more about them. And we will be treated to a piano performance. During our Music Matters series, the club is proud and grateful to feature a recent model, Hamburg Steinway Model A piano, an instrument of the caliber often found in the homes and salons of the world's greatest pianists. Please welcome Joan Gordon to discuss music education and the complete human being.
Thanks so much, Norma, and thank you for coming. I'm glad I don't have to tell you to move up too much, although it's a nice, small, intimate crowd. And I'm going to try not to hit this gavel. It's really tempting. I was honored and delighted to be asked to participate in a series entitled Music Matters. What a great title. How many times in my life would that nice, short phrase, "Music matters," have been the best answer or retort to any number of questions posed to me by a well-meaning friend, family member, or acquaintance, or perfect stranger for that matter. Because as someone who has always had music at the very center of my life, I have often found myself in a position of defending or justifying my choice to spend so much time focusing so intently on something that many view as an extra skill, window dressing, something women of bygone eras were encouraged to add to their list of abilities to enhance their ornamental value. I mean, these friends would say to me, "Don't you want to do something more significant?" Implying that music was mere fluff or at best entertainment. Because, they would say, it won't help us find a cure for cancer or achieve world peace. And, of course, I wonder, does that mean it's insignificant? Although, actually, I could interject here that if I get revved up enough, I can probably make a pretty strong case for how the comprehensive study of music might ultimately, if not directly, contribute to either finding a cure for cancer or achieving world peace. But I'm going to try not to hit this gavel. I'm also going to try, not to rant, because I want to slip my talk under this fabulous umbrella of music matters and assume that there's no need to justify or defend, but use this time to celebrate the many ways that music improves our lives. So then I had to come up with a title, Music Education and the Complete Human Being. I'm not completely satisfied with that, but I thought it was better than music and intelligence or music in the brain or music and increased academic achievement. Study music and your SAT scores will go up. Any of those. All of those things are true. And there are many, many articles that have been written in recent years to support these statements. They contain some truly remarkable results and very well-documented studies of the effects of music on intellectual functions and academic pursuits. This is all very interesting and perhaps good fodder for when one needs to defend and justify. But I also want to include, because I much prefer talking about that, what I consider to be the most amazing aspect of the study of music, almost rising to the level of magical, and that is that it develops, hones, grows, enhances all of the skills and attributes that make up a complete human being. Those parts of our being that allow and encourage us to fully participate in all aspects of life, in all things human. A good comprehensive musical education, and by that I mean not only private study of an instrument or voice or composition, but also ensemble work, working and playing with others, performance skills, musicianship, a context for all of that study. All of these things contribute to the specific skills that increase cognitive ability and improve our academic achievement. But they also serve to inspire, motivate, promote, and grow our individual personhood. Then these fully actualized human beings who become musicians take on an important and significant role in society as they communicate their art and connect with others. So the bill of fare tonight is, I do want to touch on the subject of those articles because they are important, and on this less tangible human quality of life benefits that come to those of us that engage in music. But so you don't get so bored listening to me yammer on, I have invited a couple of guests to join me. One is a very intelligent and talented young man who recently graduated from high school in May and from the pre-college and is headed off to college in just a few days. We're going to talk to him about how music has helped to shape him. I will then circle back to my favorite topic, which is the power of music, and we'll end the program with music. I've invited one of our current pre-college students to come and play for us. Because I so very much want to end the program with music, and I also was asked to do some Q&A. I think we'll insert that somewhere in the middle, maybe after I speak with Hanson, so you can ask us both questions, so that we can walk out of here with music in our heads. Okay, so what about those studies? 2 years ago, my inbox and my Facebook feed were just flooded with all these links to articles, all touting the merits of music and how it improves brain function. Every time I saw one, I would smile, but I kind of ignored them and saved them for later, thinking that, of course, I know all that stuff. I don't need to read this. In the last 6 months, there's been a new surge, which I think is likely in response to all the debate about STEM versus STEAM in the schools. Do you all know what I'm talking about with STEM? STEM is the new acronym. It's the new educational initiative, which is based on science, technology, engineering, and math. It's supposed to be the ultimate education for leadership. I think Yo-Yo Ma was one of the first, if not the first person to come out and say, wait, where are the arts in all of this? You need an A in there. STEM won't work. You need STEAM. So anyway, in preparing to speak with you tonight, I went back and found all those links I saved and read a good chunk of them. They all say much the same things. Study of music increases IQ. Some actually claim that your brain physically grows, so I guess that means they're in there with slide rules and stuff measuring your brain, which freaks me out. But the brain, music study prepares the brain for achievement. It boosts English skills. That's a huge one. Verbal, auditory, memory, literacy. Sharpens attentiveness and focus, and it fosters creativity. One of the fun things about reading these online is that you get to read all the comments that people make when they read them, because, of course, I read them, preaching to the choir. Yeah, of course. Great. I understand that. So I spent a lot of time looking around, and there's a lot of hater comments from skeptics that reference the proverbial chicken and egg question a lot. So you're saying that musicians are smarter because they study music, but it's because intelligent people are attracted to music. So music didn't make them smarter. They were smart to start with. Or they say that any art form would have the same effect, or even the intense training for a sports event, same effect. So that's what these comments say. One article I read, actually, that stood out rather brilliantly addressed these both, because it took a study, a group of teenagers who, as I understand it, were randomly placed in various activities, so not of their own choice, and then evaluated afterwards for improved academic skills. And the students that engaged in music training had more than twice the impact on brain function over those students training in sports, theater, or dance. The other one that stood out for me was actually not an article, but one of those TED Talk videos had really cool animation, and it focused on visualizing what actually happens in the brain during various activities. So you have Mr. Animated Man reading a book, and then you get to see which part of his brain lights up while he's reading a book. Then you have him walking, and another part of his brain lights up. And then he's listening to music, just listening. Every single part of his brain lights up. Then Animated Man starts playing the double bass, which I thought was a great touch, double bass, what a great. And not only is his brain all lit up, but all those different regions of the brain are actually talking to each other, which, again, according to this video, doesn't happen very often. It's not the kind of thing you can engage in a lot of activities, but you won't have that kind of activity in your brain. So I got all excited. Then I turned off the video, and I thought, okay, well, what does that really mean for day-to-day life? Can we actually live a full, satisfying life without having a lot of communication between the different sections of our brain? Well, probably, but surely it enhances our experience. I mean, we can all feel when there's a lot of stuff going on in our brain. It's exhilarating. Surely it contributes, at the very least, to academic and artistic inspiration. These articles and blogs and things all vary in quality and relevance. Some are almost superficial, but most are written in a style that reminds me that we constantly have to defend or justify the study of music. They address the whole debate of STEM versus STEAM by only saying that the A in STEAM, or the study of the arts, are necessary because they will make the student's performance and achievement in the other STEM topics at a higher level. So that argument, which is helpful in the general debate, for me also serves to marginalize this beautiful art form. I still have trouble understanding why, even now, in the decade of the 2010s, we're in this society that openly worships all things beautiful. Why not music? Why is it not known to be essential or significant? Okay, I'm ranting, sorry. Everybody has music in their life, though, even if it's just an unobtrusive soundtrack in the background, punctuating our moods and feelings. We all have music. I defy anybody to go a day without listening to music. So, on to a more fun topic. What are the other benefits of music study? The human ones. So I've made my own laundry list, which to a certain extent overlap with some of the academic achievement. Communication, attentiveness, originality, flexibility, self-esteem, persistence, critical thinking, problem solving, socialization, and empathy. Some of these, the connections are obvious. You certainly can't say that any string player who has come up with a workable fingering for the first page of Don Juan has not sharpened their problem-solving skills in the process. or the flexibility involved when a pianist, a collaborative pianist, for example, is playing a carefully rehearsed part of a sonata or duo with a whole bunch of different collaborators in a day and needing to adjust, often right in the moment. But let's just take one for the moment, and that is empathy. You can't be a good ensemble player or singer without empathy. If you don't understand what kind of crazy breathing that poor oboe player is having to do to produce that gorgeous melody while you're playing that difficult 16th note passage as an accompaniment, you won't play your part correctly. And the beauty of how we acquire these skills by playing with music with others is that we're often not even aware that we've learned them. When I was in college, I had a lesson with my cello teacher, and we were working on this passage in a concerto that I was finding rather technically challenging. I slammed through it several times, hoping she would give me some magic fingering to make it all better. But what she said, after looking at me rather quizzically and scratching her head a bit, was, "You know, Joni, I listened to your string quartet performance yesterday, and you really played gorgeously. Not only that, you handed off every line to your colleagues like a pro, so that every one of your colleagues in that quartet, you allowed them to play their best. I just don't understand why it doesn't occur to you to do that for yourself. It would make this passage so much easier." Well, some people might have been able to figure that out for themselves. Thank goodness I had such an astute teacher to point it out to me. We are fortunate in this field to have so many wonderful teachers who understand the concept that in order to grow a good musician, you have to grow the person. When I was 13, I'd been studying for just over a year. My teacher wanted me to take me to play for this woman named Margaret Rowell. Margaret was absolutely revered among cellists, not just in the Bay Area, but in the entire country and various parts of the world. From about 1960 to 1990, she was the it girl for cello. She was the woman everyone wanted to have a lesson with, if not regular study. Major performing professionals used to stop in for tune-ups when they were in the vicinity. And adding to that sort of guru-like image, her house was way up on Grizzly Peak in the Berkeley Hills. So, you know, you had to make the trek and pay homage and get advice. So everyone had a story about trying to get to her house, whether it was having their car break down halfway up the hill or trying to carry their instrument all the way up the hill and being so spent at the top that they didn't have any energy to play. Anyway, my teacher picked me up and drove to Berkeley, and on the way up the hill, she was prepping me for the lesson. She said, "You have to pay really close attention to everything she says and make sure you do it right. She's very demanding." Well, I didn't think I listened to anything after "very demanding." I started to panic, and by the time we got to Margaret's house, I was in full throttle terror. Oh my goodness, I was sure I wouldn't be able to do what she asked. She would hate me. I would embarrass my teacher. Well, we got there. I met Margaret, who was lovely and welcoming. I took out my cello, and I tried to play the first Schumann Fantasy piece. To say that I crashed and burned is a huge understatement. It was so bad, I just stopped playing. I couldn't look up. I stared at the floor, trying to imagine how I could ever extricate myself from this situation. I mean, for me, the best case scenario would have been for a trap door to magically appear in the floor so I could get out of the house without even having to make eye contact. Well, there was no trap door, and I eventually looked up, only to find her beaming at me with her hands clasped, just like this. And she said, "I'm so flattered that you're so nervous." In that moment, and with that sentence, she changed my life. There was nothing she could have said to me about my cello playing that would have been helpful at that point. Instead, she reached in, she found Joni the person, saw what I was about, and took this character trait or behavior that I perceived as a horrible failing and turned it around into a positive energy that I could use for the rest of my life. Margaret knew that you couldn't grow a good musician without growing the person. In fact, Margaret hated when people called her a cello teacher. She always corrected them. She would say, I don't teach the cello because the cello can't learn. This might be an excellent time to introduce you to Hanson Tam. Hanson is 18 years old. He just graduated from high school in May and from the SFCM pre-college, where he studied, I think we decided, 7 years. We're going with 7 years. And Friday, he's leaving for Harvard. He's an extremely accomplished musician, and he will be majoring in molecular biology. And the good news for me is that we're not going to talk molecular biology tonight, but I do want to ask Hanson some questions about his musical journey thus far. I think, should we move over there, maybe, to this mic?
Sure.
Okay. At our graduation ceremony, he spoke very articulately about the role of music in his life, so I'd like to ask him some questions about that. We haven't rehearsed this. I did send him the questions ahead of time, so I'm going to be just as surprised as you, but I'm taking this because I don't want to go off script.
So, are we working?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. So, Hanson.
Yes.
Thank you.
Of course. Tell us
a little bit about how you came to play the piano. How old were you, and was it your idea or your parents?
So, I started piano when I was 5. And unlike a lot of baby music genius stories you'll hear, my mom took me to my first piano lesson, and I didn't just decide I wanted to play piano at age 5. So my mom took me there, and at first it was an activity. It was something to do, and I liked it, and it was fun. But within a few weeks, I would say, I grew really fascinated by the piano. I would go to the piano myself. Obviously, at the beginning, you're just playing scales, you're playing little exercises, but I would even try composing my own music. Looking back, it was probably very, very simplistic, but it was enjoyable and fun nonetheless, and that was, I guess, my first spark at starting my career in music.
In those early years at the instrument, how would you describe how music fit into your life around elementary school, I guess, at that point, and your other activities?
So, throughout elementary school, I tried many different activities, from swimming, basketball, baseball, soccer, karate, I don't know. I tried many different things, and I have stopped every single one of them, except piano. And I think the best explanation for that is I'm intrinsically a more intellectual a more, I guess, sedentary person, to put it that way. But the thing about piano that really grabbed hold of me in the early years was it allowed me to really wrap myself in a little bit of a bubble and focus on working on something intently. And so with piano, I could practice by myself or with my mom. And I had goals, and I could really focus on that. Which, looking back on that now, I've changed my approach to music, in that I don't want such a focused or such a secluded learning environment for music. I've realized that opening up and reaching out and working with others is a much better experience. But you have to start somewhere, and that's what I started with, and that kind of stuck with me throughout my early years.
Well, dovetailing on that, in your graduation speech, you talked about the various different symbols that music played, or roles that music played in your life. A little bit about what you just touched on, but the reasons that you pursued music were different at different times of your life. For example, middle school versus high school.
So I guess continuing the story from elementary school, I was kind of focused, and I really enjoyed piano. That was my thing. It gave me a sense of identity. And in terms of identity, I think this touches on what you were saying about music and the complete human being, that it's it's more than just doing music or the academic benefits from it. It shaped the way I thought, the way I acted, and I thought of myself more and more as an artist. And so I approach many things in life this way, whether it's papers or lab reports or how I dress, how I try to talk or act. I'm always thinking that I'm trying to produce a piece of artwork, and I'm always trying to put my best foot forward. So in that sense, in middle school, I became a little competitive in the sense that I did a lot of piano competitions, some of which were at my piano teacher's urging to help me improve and grow. But I did a lot of that, and my mentality wasn't, I would say, extremely stressful or burdensome, that I have to win this competition. But I was using competitions, I guess, as a motivating factor to keep going. It was quite goal-oriented, I would say, and there was a time in my life where it was like, I need to beat the other person, you know. And that wasn't very constructive, as I soon found out. So those were a couple years, but I don't know exactly when this changed, but in the first few years of high school, I came to develop a slightly different perspective, which was the idea of self-improvement, of trying to focus on how I can do better in the realm, even of competition. So when I kept on doing competitions in high school, I would use them to really motivate myself to learn some new pieces, to learn different styles of music, to try to gain some insight from what I was playing, what I was listening to, and my experiences performing. And so I feel like I've grown a lot in that aspect in terms of what music has done for me at different stages in my life.
Here's my big blockbuster question for you. You are so obviously intelligent and capable, and you've achieved so much in so many areas already in your life. There's no doubt in my mind that you would be headed to Harvard or somewhere comparable, even, it pains me to say this, if you had not had the benefit of music study. But what do you think would be different about your life or about you if you hadn't devoted so much of it to music?
So I'm not so sure about that. I'm flattered that you have so much confidence in me, but I'm not so sure about that. You really can't look back and say what would have happened if I hadn't done it. It's really hard to determine if I would have gotten the same lessons or the same come to believe in the same values, if I had different experiences or gone down a different path. But I'll try, and I think I'll focus more, as you were saying, on the more human aspects of what music has done for me. I think it has really contributed to my emotional development in a couple of ways. So first, music is one of those things that universally reaches people as an art form. It can really, just listening to it, can really move you, unlike other art forms. Maybe I don't know so much about painting, but when I look at paintings, I know that there's something behind there, but it's not immediately accessible to me. Or when I look at some contemporary dance, the same thing. I see little tidbits of expression, but I'm not able to absorb it all at once. But I feel that music, when you hear it, it does something to your heartbeat, to your whole body, and it really captivates you in a way that even not knowing too much music, just it really pulls you in and draws you in. And I feel that has changed the way I feel things and the way I experience things. So that's one aspect of emotional development. Another one, I would say, is about communication. The ability to communicate things without words, that I or any other artist who's performing has that ability to do that. And I feel that's really special about music. Other things. Socially. I've never been the most social child throughout growing up. I think my entire family can attest to that. But music put me in situations where I got to interact with people about something I was passionate. And so through chamber music, I played in a piano trio for 4 years while I was at the pre-college. I've also done played flute in school orchestra, so not piano, but it was still a way to get involved in a group, and that really helped me in terms of working with other people's desires, other people's wants, other people's beliefs about music, and also just the more mundane aspects of social life, like small talk or things like that. I think I want to finish on going back to identity. And again, there are different sides of identity. One of the things about identity is how other people look at you. So music definitely helped me with that part. Other people saw me as the person who played the piano. Hopefully they saw me as the person who played piano well, but that's a different story. It gave me something to cling on to. It's an association, and that really helps boost your confidence. On the other side, identity, when you look at yourself, I feel that gives you more of a guidance in where to go in life. And even if it's not the ultimate place, for example, right now I'm not thinking about a career in music, as you have heard, but it gave me the momentum, the impetus to really challenge myself and to grow myself in a direction. And I feel that having a direction is really important. And music was the thing that really gave me a purpose to a lot of things I did. So I hope that answered some parts.
See,
of
we
your
didn't
question.
Rehearse, and he just made all my points. That's fantastic. Does anybody have any questions for me or for Hanson? Yes. We're talking about what I know about, and I don't know a lot about other world music, but my initial answer is yes, absolutely. It's all the same art form. And whether or not you are reading it off a page or learning it directly from someone else, the benefits are the same. The communication, all of these things we're talking about, is all the same. Yes? I assume you all heard that, but she was asking about whether we would be willing to go to Washington and advocate for this. Sure. I guess my, well, what's interesting is my point about all the articles and all this stuff. This has been going on for a long time. I mean, it's been a long time since music in the schools was taken for granted. And even when I was in school, and we did have music in the schools, it was not at a high level. And but it did serve to expose us. So I don't know what to say to that. Yes, of course, everyone should be up in arms. Anything else? Anything for Hanson? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
I'll ask one question. Oh, okay. I have to make an announcement for identification, if I may. Just our thanks to Joan Gordon, Director of Pre-College and Adult Education Divisions at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. And you've been listening to Hanson Tam as well, her student. We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program at the Commonwealth Club of California titled Music Education and the Complete Human Being. And my question was, even, say, rock music, or has that been tested at all? Does that have some of the same positive effects?
I'm going to stick with my original answer, which is yes, I think all music does. There are so many different aspects or so many different characteristics to different kinds of music. And I think they would probably emphasize different parts of that laundry list that I gave you. But music is music. It is that wonderful art form. And it does engage our brains and our emotions in ways that others don't. And I think it's the communication part of that. I mean, you can look at a beautiful piece of art and it can touch you and inspire you, but there's not that immediate communication going on. Yes?
Why an electric violin?
Oh, okay. So a question for me. why molecular biology? So I've had many, many interests in my life. I would say that throughout most of my school years, I was most into math, but why not math and molecular biology? And why not music and molecular biology, I guess, is the question. And I would say that, for me, biology has a mix of two different worlds. The first world is that of certainty and logic, and I really like that about math. It's clean, I can see beauty in different proofs or the way problems are solved. But then also, life, I feel, as I've grown older, there's a lot of beauty and uncertainty too, that things that are not so clear, like our emotions or the way we communicate. And I've learned a lot about that through music, really. I've learned a lot about that there's a lot of times there are no definitive ways to play or perform a piece of music. That there's things that are up to interpretation, and you really have to figure them out, and you have to decide. And so, for me, biology has that science component to it that has the rigor of finding something with certainty. But on the other hand, it is such a complicated system we're talking about that I feel there's always mysteries, and that mystery, I feel, gives room for creativity, and that's really something I've just been interested in.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yes.
So, do you feel that you need to take a break from the academic part of your music, whatever you, whatever took you to this point, and because of you're going to use another part of your brain, or do you feel that you just have to keep going? Going parallel to your new career and your endeavor.
So if I understand your question, it's am I still going to be doing music going forward and how important I think that is going forward?
Sure, but do you feel that you need to take a break from whatever you've been doing musically up to now because you feel that you have to move on to something?
So you're asking if he needs to take a break from music?
Okay.
And do electrical?
I would say no. music has always been a part of my life, and I feel it would just be something that's missing if I stop. In fact, I wouldn't say music is an added-on activity or an added-on stress. It's something that makes me who I am and helps me relieve some of that at times. So I'm definitely going to be still playing piano. I'll see if I'll still be playing flute. We'll see in college. But that opportunity to continue to perform, to communicate with others, and also to work together in small groups, chamber ensembles, or an orchestra, I really feel that I want to keep that in my life, and that will be really valuable.
Cellist from his trio is also going to Harvard, right?
Yeah.
Yes?
Do you have a go-to piece of music when you're inspired, you're frustrated, you're excited when it's 1 a.m. in the morning, and just sit down and you just do it all the time?
I would say that there are different pieces of music for different moods. As much as I wish I had one favorite piece of music, I don't think that's the case. There are definitely moments in life where you're super excited and happy, and I can think of so many pieces that express that kind of joy and that kind of energy. Maybe a Beethoven sonata or something, the rhythm, the drive behind it is so great. But there are other times where I'm feeling down. I'm human too. And there are times where I'm feeling sad. And when those times come about, sometimes I think about the opening of Schumann's Piano Concerto and that kind of haunting, eerie, kind of very inside, introspective feel. I don't know. So different music for different moods.
Yes?
I'm guessing that most of your peers are not going to Harvard. Your peers at the conservatory. So I'm wondering if...
You'd actually be surprised. We have more going on to Ivy League schools than to conservatories. But go ahead.
How many? I'm curious, actually.
Well, we had about 40 people graduating, and I would say there were close to half were going to Harvard, Yale, Brown. Yeah.
Well, I'm curious that that's an interesting finding, and I'm wondering if that's the parents' motivation that get them involved in conservatory during high school, or if the intelligence of the pursuit of education is more inspired by music education.
So from my experience, just on a very personal level, music turned out to be much more of a, I guess, developmental transformation for me than anything else. I don't know if I can go back and evaluate how much my academic performance improved, or my various skills improved, or my communication skills improved, my problem-solving skills improved. I am not able to quantify that, but for me, the things that I'm able to reflect on and feel the most are the social, the emotional, the life lessons that I've gotten from music.
Yes. You're very well spoken.
Thank you.
Really very well and thoughtful in a thoughtful way. Did you go to a private school or
a public school? Start off by answering that I do not know whether those two things are related, but I went to a private school, and I've seen some of my friends who've gone to public schools, and they are also very well spoken. So I don't know if that makes the difference. I feel that part of it is how much you're willing to put yourself out there, which has taken me a long time, but also, part of it is just the way you approach thinking about things. Whenever you get a problem or whenever you get a question, how do you start processing it? And I don't know if I can exactly outline what I am thinking, but I feel that the different things I've done in life have probably helped me be thoughtful.
I think we have time for one more. And you had
your... confused about the syllabuses of the different schools going on here, and the comment that you made about 50% of the class, quote unquote, going to Ivy League schools, and with respect to what you're doing, you know, having being a former professor at Cal and being a scientist. I don't understand something, that is, how
So I did go to a typical, what you might consider a typical private school. In fact, I went to Menlo, if you know which school that is. And I would say I put a lot of weight on academic studies. I definitely
We're just a Saturday program.
A lot on that. Yeah. So I did spend my Saturdays at the conservatory, and I did private lessons. Sometimes we had studio classes. I did chamber music. At one point, I did musicianship. So there can be a formalized course of study for music as well, but that's in addition to what you're doing. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Hanson.
Of course. It was a pleasure.
I want to move on to discuss...
Come back over here. Get to walk a little bit. But I want to circle back to where we started, which is the whole Music Matters theme and the important role that music plays in our society. Music, as I mentioned before, plays a role in everybody's life, and whatever amount of time we choose to devote or invest in musical experiences will always reward us in quality of life ways. For those people who study music and don't go on to molecular biology or an Ivy League school, I certainly was one whose parents very much wanted me to take music lessons. But, you know, then when I started down that path of, oh, this is going to be my career, they're like, whoa, 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 wait. That's not what we were thinking about. This happens a lot because, back to the original questions, you know, is this essential? Is it significant? Never mind, does it pay well? But we know we derive pleasure from hearing. I just want to talk for a moment about the power of music and why it is so essential and why musicians are so essential. We derive pleasure from hearing a beautiful piece of music or discovering some harmonic progression or melody that just happens to strike a poignant chord. In answer to your question, what is that piece? What is that thing? I know that that favorite passage in a piece of music that we find ourselves playing over and over again because it evokes something in us. Small snippets of pieces that we strongly associate with events from that Southern California baseball team that I won't name that insists on butchering the opening of Beethoven's Fifth after every strikeout. Or some famous TV sitcom themes that take you right back to the 70s. My parents' generation had simple folk songs that conjured up whole political movements when they were played. We Shall Overcome was synonymous with the civil rights movement. Blowin' in the Wind was the theme song for the March on Washington. These associations and effects that music has can be quite dramatic at times, and nothing pleases a performing musician more than having an audience member come back after a show and talk about how the music influenced or touched them. A friend and colleague of mine delivered a welcome address to music students at Boston Conservatory several years ago, and it so resonated with so many musicians that it went mildly viral on the internet. In it, he referenced a performance he had done with a friend at a nursing home. They began the program with Aaron Copland's Sonata for Violin and Piano, which was written during World War II and dedicated to a young pilot who was shot down during the war. So they came out, started playing this piece. Midway through the piece, an elderly man seated in a wheelchair near the front of the concert hall began to weep. Later in the concert, when the performers talked a little bit about that first piece and its origin, this same man became so disturbed that he had to leave the auditorium. He came backstage afterwards to speak with them, and he told them the following. During World War II, I was a pilot, and I was in an aerial combat situation where one of my team's planes was hit. I watched my friend bail out and watched his parachute open, but the Japanese planes which had engaged us returned and machine-gunned across the parachute cord so as to separate the parachute from the pilot, and I watched my friend drop away into the ocean, realizing that he was lost. I have not thought about this for many years, but during that first piece of music you played, this memory returned to me so vividly that it was as though I was completely reliving it. I didn't understand why this was happening. Why now? But then, when you came out to explain that this piece of music was written to commemorate a lost pilot, it was a little bit more than I could handle. He went on to ask them, how does the music do that? How did it find those feelings and those memories in me? My own story is a little bit less dramatic than that, but happened to help to cement my early understanding of the power of music. I was just a young teenager and been playing cello for just a couple years. My mother was working in a daycare center for severely emotionally disturbed children. They had a part-time music therapist who, when she found out I was a cellist, asked me if I would come sit in on a group session and just sit in the corner and play the cello. They even rented a you know, what we call a picnic cello for me, so mine would not get damaged. So I came and sat and played. I was playing Vivaldi sonatas. While other activities were going on, I wasn't aware that anyone was paying attention, and I actually was kind of wondering why I was there. But after about 10 minutes, this 9 or 10-year-old boy started to crawl onto my lap. Now, when you're playing the cello, there's not too much lap there. So you have to be fairly determined to try to do that. But he did make it up there. So he put his head on the back of the cello and he smiled at me. When I stopped between movements, he would grab my left hand and put it back on the cello. At the end of the session, staff picked him up and the other children left. I packed up my cello and started to walk out when I saw that the social worker, the psychologist, and the music therapist were all waiting to see me. They told me that this boy had been there for 6 months and had never moved, spoken, made eye contact, or in any way interacted with anyone during that time. This was such a huge breakthrough, they said. When can you come back? I left there that day feeling more human than I can ever remember. Not because of how well I played, but because I and my music had made someone feel connected, even for only 20 minutes. It made me wonder what else might be possible. The possibilities of how music can improve quality of life seemed and do seem endless. In my later life here as an administrator, one of the most exciting things for me to watch at a conservatory, at a high-end music festival, and here at the pre-college is what happens when talented young musicians who take their considerable skill that they gain in their private study and put it in context with the world through their musicianship knowledge and they communicate with each other through playing, teaching, collaborating, and listening. They inspire each other and allow themselves to be inspired. They inspire their audiences and allow the audiences to inspire them. It is this that makes music so magical, so human, and so significant. As promised, we will close this evening with some music. Sarah Twan, who's been waiting very patiently in the front row, and just turned 13 last month, I have to say that. She's a student at the pre-college, and she will be performing The Young Juliet from 10 Pieces from Romeo and Juliet by Prokofiev. So I invite you to allow yourself to be stirred, inspired, and enjoy this exquisite and significant art form. It will make your life better. Sarah? Thank you.
Our thanks to Joan Gordon, Director of the Pre-College and Adult Extension Divisions at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, for her inspiring talk, Music Education and the Complete Human Being, and to her two fine students, Hanson Tam and Sarah Tuan, on the piano. We also thank our audience here and our listening audience. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, in its 113th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.